Someone's got their speakers on and I can hear myself talking.
It's probably Ben in his car, so but this won't be how we'll finally record the show.
I'm talking on speakerphone in my car, you know?
Why are you doing that?
Because I'm driving and I'm 5 minutes away from home.
Yeah, we'll wait till he gets home before we actually do the show, so it'll be fine.
Okay.
All right, maybe I misplaced it. But anyway, the next thing I had after that was that Comic Alliance is shutting down.
Oh, boy.
I didn't quite get this when everyone was talking about it, because it's like, I agree with Scott Kurtz. We're, you know, there's other sites out there. What's the big deal, I suppose, other than, I guess it's being a big company and people are losing their jobs. But yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of big comic news sites. I personally didn't see how big of a news this was.
Which comic news site went down?
It's
Comics Alliance.
Okay, this is big news because it's AOL is falling apart. AOL, who went through its latest Phoenix incarnation of being part of Huffington Post, it's still not doing very well. It's like Sears.
That was the dumbest thing they ever did.
The Time Warner thing.
The dumbest thing that has ever occurred with AOL was when they merged with Time Warner. The most what the fuck is going on, but the reason that happened was because it was the dot-com boom, AOL was flush with cash, and no one noticed that dial-up subscriptions were already starting to wane, but no one was really paying attention, so we got AOL Time Warner.
Actually, that's almost as dumb as what happened to JCPenney.
Oh, well, JCPenney might be merging with Sears Kmart now.
Yeah.
What? No.
Well, okay, you know why they did this entire JCPenney's were going to go ultra hipster?
The way I understood it is they hired two marketing guys from Apple that basically said you need to turn hip and stuff. They basically...
No, it wasn't about that at all. It was never about being hip. It was honestly about inflating the stock price so that they could then sell themselves to someone else. And Sears Kmart, which is I think is coming up on another...
How do they have money?
Here's how you make money nowadays.
How does Sears and Kmart have money?
No, seriously, here's how you do it. You go before a judge and you say, we are bankrupt. The judge says, what are you going to do about it? You say, we're going to revitalize ourselves by buying or merging with someone else. You do that and then you wait 5 more years. And then 5 years, you have to go before the bankruptcy court again. And they say, what are you going to do to revitalize yourself? And then you say, I'm going to merge or buy someone. And you just keep doing this for the rest of eternity.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Zombie companies.
Oh, boy.
They're just eating
the way, the way I heard it at work is a guy told me that they hired these two Apple guys that changed their brain to JCP. And basically what happened was they were actually extremely hostile towards Neiman Marcus about the whole Martha Stewart brand thing, and pretty much opened up their doors to that lawsuit, and then JCPenney like fired those two guys and like, oh my god, what happened?
That was an excuse that really honestly was about boosting the price by saying, look, we've got an Apple guy, look, we're going to boost our prices and then we're going to sell ourselves, but it didn't go so well.
We can actually talk more about that on the show. I did move the hyperbole and a half down to, I mean, maybe. Is that even news? I mean,
no.
Okay. Well, it's news because she did come back after a long hiatus, and I kind of like it because it is one of the best descriptions of having depression I've ever seen. And I really honestly recommend it to people to read. And in fact, some mental health, professionals that I know have said that they really thought this was like one of the best descriptions of depression ever.
All right.
So that's why I was mentioning it.
I'm going to put it under skip. If we don't actually talk about it, I will still
put
it.
No, that's okay. That's fine.
I'll still put something like that in the post for extra interest. Okay. Sounds like we got a full plate here. So if we're all ready to go.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon here at at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. And let's see here. Yes, the new Webcast Beacon Network is here, which is basically an expansion of the focus of the website to also include more individualized content not inherently related to a particular podcast. So we may have posts and audio and video that aren't a part of the Webcomic Beacon or Web Fiction world necessarily. I'm also going to be looking to add more editorials, events reports, and get other get public submissions from people for articles as well to be posted on the website. So this is, as with every time we try something new at the Webcast Beacon Network, it is an experiment moving forward. And I would also like to welcome the Webcast Beacon Network's first new integrated affiliate, Epiguides Epicast, basically to take up the position of where Web Fiction World sort of left off. The Web Fiction World will return with Web Fiction readings, so they'll kind of work together. But you can find out more information in the associated links in this show post. But moving on, this is a newscast episode for Sunday, May 12th, 2013. I'm Fess, and with me we have Terrence McManus from Average Joe at AJComic.com. Welcome.
Hello. Happy Mother's Day to everyone.
Hooray! Ben Carver from Animation Aficionados.
Welcome. Good to be back.
Kitty Hawk from Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki.
Nice to be back. SGBY.com.
Woo! Woo! And let's see here. This week, I think we're going to go ahead and start off with Penny Arcade at it again, bucking the system or whatever they're doing. Kitty Hawk, this was your article.
Yes, it is. Okay, so Penny Arcade has come back with another Kickstarter after previous Kickstarter, which was for an ad-free site. Their new Kickstarter is basically let's restart the podcast, and it had a goal of just $10, which leads me to think that this is performance art, because there's no reason to do it except to just say, hey, we have a Kickstarter. And this was the reason I came across this was there were people calling this controversial, and there was blowback, and everyone was so pissed off. And at first I was like, why is everyone so pissed off? Now, to say some stuff, I do look at some Kickstarters and I'm like, why are you doing this? Yeah, well, there is a place for Kickstarters. I mean, I know some people who've done some games using Kickstarter, and, you know, it's worked out pretty good for them. I know people who've done books. I don't understand books, but, you know, hey, that's what you want to do. But I do enjoy that Penny Arcade has decided to embrace using Kickstarter to do stupid things like the ad-free site, but especially this podcast, because they're just trying to prove, like, there's just some things that you just don't need these social funding, you know,
crowdsourcing.
Crowdfunding. You don't need crowdsourcing to do certain things like doing a podcast, making a website, unless the website's, I don't know, like the most spectacular, sparkly website you ever saw that gives you a blowjob.
Yeah. and we talked about the Penny Arcade ad free site before, and it's like, honestly, that is not what Kickstarter was for.
So fast, why didn't you start a Kickstarter to relaunch the Webcast Beacon Network?
Because there's no like end product that people can take home from, you know? I mean,
so you did a Kickstarter for Webcomics Beacon?
No, I didn't. I've never done a Kickstarter.
I'm joking because
okay. I was like, what? I didn't hear about this. What you talking about?
I was making a joke, but anyways, have we ever got confirmation that Gabe and Tycho yelled at ducks?
Yeah, the videos were posted online, and it took a few hours. It was one of them reading a list of all the people that donated, chasing around ducks around a yard.
That's awesome.
Boring.
I think this is awesome that they're doing these kind of, like,
stretch
performance
goals.
Art sort of things, because it's, Yeah, Kickstarter is not for your making your podcast. It is not for making your site ad-free. It is not to help you eat. It is to make a product or service.
I suppose that they kind of are producing a product out of this, though, even if
they are.
As simple as a podcast. And I've seen it mentioned in places as this is to pay for their time to do it as professionals rather than, you know, the cost of pumping electricity through your mic.
But they did set it at $10. So that leads me to think
it's really kind of shitty looking.
Yeah. Everything else.
All right. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying that you're right that they're clearly not interested in the cost if they're putting only $10 on it, because there's no way they're not going to reach that.
No. They made it in seconds.
Yeah, but it is a political. It's a publicity stunt, clearly.
Yeah.
Because
it is, definitely. And I am
for certain Kickstarters. One of my favorite examples is I am a fan of lots of the classic game makers and game developers from the early 90s, like Tim Schafer and Chris Roberts. And they both did Kickstarters to make new games. Tim Schafer did a Kickstarter. And because we've seen his results before, we've seen what he could do solo with Psychonauts. Yeah. It was a well-earned.
He had a team for that, but I get what you're saying.
He proved himself with a track record before he started Kickstarter.
He had a track record like well before like I had pubes. So I mean,
another example is Chris Roberts. He created this game. He's working on this space sim called Star Citizen. And what he did was the same thing. He showed early test renders of the engine, saying, "This is a fully working engine right now. It's not perfect, but this is what I have right now. I need a little bit more money." And because Chris Roberts has a history with space sims, a track record, again, like we said, and sadly, a really, really bad movie.
But I see what you're saying about like a track record with Kickstarter, and I understand that. But my thing with Kickstarter is, if you're going to do a Kickstarter, it should be for something that you cannot do on your own. Like a podcast is something, honestly, you can go down to Walmart, you can get yourself a mic, you can get yourself a headset. Yeah. I know you're going to have to teach yourself a lot of things, but that's true of anything that you do.
And the best audio tools are free. Like Audacity is the best audio tool that we've used.
That's what I use to send you all the files. But what I'm trying to point out with this is that as long as you can like prove that you have the chops to do it, like go in with your Kickstarter, show everything that you're going to do, and that's the way to do it. But what I have a problem with is people who do Kickstarters for like paying for their site, which I'm like, sorry, there's like WordPress, you can use that, or even books. Yeah. Like I do know people who've done book
now pre-orders,
and that's something like I understand, you know, that it is a product, is a service, but I'm just sort of like, with that, it's more of a personal thing. Like, why are you printing a dead tree in 2013?
Part of it I see is this is lots of Kickstarters that are is what I call kick frauders are for things that are non-tangible. Like a good example is I don't remember the name of this guy, but I remember his video. He's one of those reviewtainment people that's not even one of the even semi-important guys, and he had this idea of doing this crossover movie called Reviewer Avengers. And he won like $5,000 for it, and he only got like $200.
But I'm sure he didn't have anything on the Kickstarter, like here's what I can do or anything like that.
No, it's like his whole pitch was, I'm going to contact people more famous than I am and have them star in Reviewer Avengers, and we're going to do what's essentially the Avengers but with internet reviewers. And it was like the worst thing I've ever heard in my life, and he won $5,000 for it.
Yeah, you can't just like, oh, with this money I hope to be able to contact these people and convinced. No, that's terrible. But, you know, I still will agree that doing pre-orders is still a viable thing because PayPal won't let you do that. They'll be like,
one of my favorite Kickstarters also is Pebble. Pebble is an example of a Kickstarter that's where if you donate $50 or so, or I forgot how much it is, if you donate like a, I think it's $100 or so, you get a smartwatch because that's what Pebble is. Pebble is a smartwatch, and Pebble is much more of a tangible. You donate, but you donate to get.
Well, there's a product, and it's fine to donate to a service too, like a movie or something like that. It's just like I'm saying is that you have to prove yourself. What I get irritated with is when I see someone doing a Kickstarter, and they don't really have a plan. And then they start like adding they don't even really have like stretch goals, and they just start adding things in this like weird attempt to try to like get you to give money. Like, oh well, I'm going to start adding in T-shirts, even though I don't even have the T-shirts. I'm going to just start throwing things in, and I'm like, did you not come in with a plan or anything?
Karen, hang on one second, Ben.
I have to bring up James Rolfe when he did his Kickstarter for the AVGN movie. A lot of the things he offered were like no prizes. Like basically, if you donate this much, your name will be on the credits roll. It's like you had to donate like a ridiculous amount. Like I think it was $8,000, and you will actually be in the movie.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And it's like this is the most obscene thing I've ever seen. And the more obscene thing is he actually made like double his goal.
All right. I think we could probably do a whole separate show on Kickstarter, kick frauder stuff. So we'll consider looking at that, but we're going to go ahead and move on. Terrence, was there anything left you wanted to add?
No. I was just going to say butt in with when they were talking about the some of the backing rewards on this one, kind of like the last Penny Arcade thing are a little bit ridiculous and seem to be a little bit, you can pledge, a few thousand dollars and they'll talk about your kind of thing for a podcast. It seems to be a little bit unweighted, but that was, it's going to be interesting to see where it ends up on the final price tally. They're certainly going to do it now, at least. That's something. They got, 82,000 out of their $10? So.
Such
a successful Kickstarter.
One thing I would like to see that'd be different than Kickstarter, that's something that what they're using it for. It's not a Kickstarter, but it would have a little bit more, because Kickstarter is everybody takes a chance when they fund something, because that is what it is. It's an investor. There's a risk, but there's no like legal responsibility there. I would like something that's a little bit more legal responsibility, a little bit more tied in with a built-in system that people can start uses.
All roads lead to Mr. Wonderful.
I've already done this. Like, okay. Now, I will admit that using PayPal can be scary because they can take your money at any time. Mm-hmm. But But I did do a fundraiser where I helped pay for my tablet, and PayPal does have legal like protections. Like if you don't receive what you said you received, you can actually demand your money back. So what I did is that my fundraiser was anyone who donated got a copy of the comic. So if I didn't deliver on that comic, people could have gotten their money back. So it's really just, I think what really needs to happen is that banks need to be more open to microtransfers, transactions, because I think that's what's needed here is we really need, well, that would also involve having to fix the banking system in the United States. So I have no idea.
I don't think it's not the banking system. PayPal is not a bank. Legally and technically,
they are owns a bank, though. That's the thing.
They own a bank. PayPal is a transfer service.
They own a bank.
I understand that, but technically, legally, they're not held liable at the same thing as if they were a bank, which is the problem. I would like I would like a PayPal alternative and a Kickstarter alternative, sort of working together as in something that would be viable, what everyone's trying to use the services for, but it's just not here yet.
Will probably happen in other countries, most likely Europe and Japan first. because microtransactions are already happening in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
So I think what's going to happen is in the next few years, you're going to see, I don't know what it'll be based on, what currency, what country it will come from, but I have a feeling in the next few years, there's going to be some way to do microtransactions.
Bitcoins.
Well, I'm really hoping on Bitcoins. So, you know, hey, all right. Y'all buy some Bitcoins, okay?
Yeah, right. Okay, so let's...
That'd be good. Then you could run something like this, say, through your own website, like through Penny Arcade. They try to fund for, you know, their ELC podcast and maybe not tie up a Kickstarter with something it wasn't quite intended for.
Right, and then Kickstarter gets a percentage anyway, so Kickstarter doesn't care because they know they're going to get...
5%,
motherfuckers! Yeah, like 100,000 or whatever it is. Let's move on! Let's move on to, hey, there's a new webcomic RSS aggregator app now on the iTunes store. But here's the catch. It uses creator permission and gives them a cut of the profit. It's called Comic Chameleon at comiccameleon.com. I think I mentioned them months ago. It's a free app. It's ad supported. Creators whose webcomics are on the app with permission get a percentage of the revenue made through the app ads. And it's just went live, and I don't have an iPhone, so I wasn't able to check it out. But this is like the first thing that actually uses creators' permission and cuts them in on the revenue. Kitty Hawk, you actually checked this out, right?
Yeah, I actually just checked it out, and it's interesting in that they've done it, and they are sharing the ad revenue, but okay. For one thing, it looks extremely generic, like they used the GUI tools, and
they have no unique UI is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's actually saving onto my actual phone. So I think like I still have to have the internet. So I'm like, why am I using this? I have Safari on this. I could be using that. And I'm not trying to knock it. Actually, I am knocking it because like this, this is actually an irritation I have recently, which is called the return of the web rings, which everyone is like in this, oh my God, our ad revenue is falling. Oh my God, we're not getting discovered as much, which isn't true. And so everyone's sort of going to this like web ring sort of mentality again, where we're all going to group up together and we're going to like, you know, share and all like that. But there seems to be this like ad revenue part that seems to be, you know, slapped on top of it. And I'm like, okay, I make enough on my ads to pay for my server and then some. I don't know, like, if this is really going to help you any, because for one thing, the ads on here are pretty big, and that irritates the fuck out of me. So I'm actually thinking about just going back to Safari and pinching and zooming to see the comics. Also, the comics aren't like, it's irritating because like you touch it in certain places and it doesn't want to zoom correctly.
Looking at this, this is actually an overblown. This is something
this is
that
just
I could. This is just a web app. I could write this myself.
Yeah. Well, okay.
This is a web app.
Here's the thing. I just relaunched my site, and a lot of it we focused on mobile, I know that mobile is becoming the big way. Everyone's got tablets. Everyone's getting smartphones. This is how people are going to start reading their comics. So I redesigned my site. You can go to it, sgby.com. And it's online. And what we're going to do for like people who are part of the USB subscription is we're going to switch them over to CBRs. Why? Because CBRs won as far as like, you know, archival of comics. Like everyone who reads comics has a CBR viewer on their device, and they just download the CBRs onto their machine, and that's how they read it. This is not really a solution here because this is not archival. So like if I'm on a plane, this isn't going to work. So what's the point?
Exactly. Once you want to read lots of comics at once, you're probably on a trip somewhere. That's usually when I do most of my reading at once. And you're absolutely right, Kitty Hawk. And another, like I said, another thing looking at this, and another thing is you should check out the new SGVY.com because Kitty Hawk uses what is called responsive CSS design, where basically it's the same HTML file, but it looks different depending on. It looks different depending on the size of your screen. That's better than doing an m.website.com because that way you're not serving two different pages. You're not using outdated user agent detection, which is shit. I hate user agent detection. Only stupid IT people love that shit still.
And now I got to tag this episode not safe for work. Terrence,
what do you think?
Well, I've downloaded it here as well and having a bit of a play with it. I can sort of see why it would be useful if you're just, you know, sitting on your couch and just wanted to catch up with a few of the comics you follow. Though I don't know, there seems to only be a handful on here signed up for the service at the moment anyway.
It's all the Topato Co. Group, it looks like. Like a lot of the people on this, I looked at the list. And it's the same list of people who do t-shirts through Topato Co.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then that's the thing. This really doesn't... Go ahead, Terrence.
I was going to say that they've got the tab there down the bottom for where you can plug straight in from your app to browse the merch store for these webcomics.
Excellent. So,
here is where I see it,
like I said, is this really doesn't help with discovery, and that's one of the things Kitty Hawk brought up about the web, you know, the web ring mentality is someone who gets this is going to be someone who already reads these certain comics already. It's not going to really help with discovery because you know what most people do when they want to discover a new web comic now is Google.
Yeah. Now here's where I think it works. Hang on. Here's where I think this works. Because before this, what did you have? You had somebody coming up every once in a while, basically making an RSS scraper or a website scraper that basically republished people's content without permission. And it was ad supported. So then they also got the ads. But and a lot of the excuses, not of the excuses, but a lot of things, well, I never saw any sort of app like this. So here's an app. It has permission. It exists. So if somebody's looking... they might see it already. I think it works great as a sort of stopper for some of those other things so people don't have to deal with just stealing content.
I will argue and say that if you are providing an RSS feed, there's no scraping involved. So I would say that once you put your shit on the internet, you might as well accept that it is going to get trampled on, fucked, whatever.
True, it's but it doesn't make it legally right, especially when they're making ad money off of it.
You don't say legally. Morally, because no, there's two totally different things here.
It's legal.
I would say that, yes, maybe you are stealing, but I would say no, because I'm sorry, if you have an RSS feed, you're basically saying, yes, please, place me into Feedly, because readers
exactly. Dead. Exactly. Once you have anything in an RSS feed, anything that's in the RSS feed is on the internet. It is out there. It is floating out and free.
No. The problem is they always have ads on it. No, there's always ads on it. So basically somebody else...
How do you put an ad in an RSS feed?
No.
How you do that fast.
When somebody makes...
You can't do it.
I'm telling you, Ben. There are plugins. When you do this... whenever I've seen it done, it's if it's a website or an app, there's always ads on the site or within the app. Therefore, the person that made it is making money directly off of other people's stuff. Granted, there may be still a link, but it's still you're repurposing somebody else's copyrighted material.
But the thing is that's saying like any RSS app is stealing content then. If it has an ad, it's like totally raping these people out of money they never had.
Well, let me give you a good example of this because
a lot of times it's usually website scraping though.
No, it's not. It's a good example of this is Phil Foglio's Girl Genius has an RSS feed. And if I check the RSS feed, I see comics in it and I never had to see his ads. And he's okay with that because I usually read it on my mobile device. And And that's the thing. He's okay with that. He knows he knows when he created an RSS feed that that's what he signed up for, and he doesn't care.
Also, RSS, I'm going to go ahead and say this. It is normally used by the hyper fans and the very technically abled. Like, trying to explain this to most people that aren't really big into the internet, it's really hard to explain RSS feeds. And I think that's part, like, I think readers shouldn't have been killed, but I think this was Google's justification, was that normal people just don't use RSS. So, I mean, and if you don't want people stealing your shit, then don't put an RSS feed out.
But just don't put it on the internet. Just block it down.
Yeah, I only put thumbnails. I don't put the full size comic in the RSS. And also, the last few is like some of them were pay apps. Like you actually pay the app.
Put the full comic in the RSS
because I want them to visit the website that I built.
Well, no, I'm saying, why would you put the full comic in the RSS?
Some people do.
Phil Folio does, and like I said, that works great because I could just go into my reader and just look at his comics each time they update.
Okay, well, I guess if you're just doing it that way, but me, I have an RSS feed full of things, and I don't have time to, like, oh, God, wait for it to load.
I don't know. Anyway. That's why I spent the time to build the website.
But back to the Comic Chameleon app, like I said, I'm looking at it and I'm not seeing anything that promotes discovery. It's like if you already know, like if you already read like two or three of these comics, you get this. But even then, it's like most of these comics have.
Oh, you know what?
Most of these comics have mobile optimized sites anyways.
There's no favorite.
Yeah.
There's
no bookmarks or favorites.
It's far from perfect, but I think it's I like that it actually asks creators permission and does split revenue.
I know, but that's the big important part.
Let's
say that you only like XKCD and you only want to know when XKCD updates. You will have to scroll all the way down at the bottom of this list to see if XKCD updated.
Isn't that
good for everybody else on there? Because that's what I was just thinking, scrolling through it. I've never read most of these, but you know, I'm scrolling through to get to the one I want.
Let's say that I'm on Hulu and I want to watch Kitchen Nightmares. And if I want to find Kitchen Nightmares, I shouldn't have my favorites or my most watched block as my top block, like Hulu does. Smartly, I have to like go all the way down, find cooking shows, and then scroll all the way down to K's. And that's brilliant because that forces discovery. That's what you're saying.
I'm not saying it's perfect. I mean, especially since I don't have an iPhone and I can't see this. But
well, I'm asking Terrence because I'd say it's
more like something like the service Ink Outbreak provides, for instance, where you go there knowing the one or a couple of things that you want to read, and then you get exposed to other things
This is the wrong way of doing it. By not having a favorites and saying it's part of the design is the wrong way of doing it. What you do is use aggregation and basically saying if all these people read this comic and they also read this comic and say after they finish reading the latest comic, just have a message say, I see you like this comic. 37 other people that like this comic. That's how you do it. You do discovery through aggregation, through trends, not through force by removing of favorites.
So it has potential.
It needs some you know, tweaking. But
it has potential.
Yeah. It does have potential, but I will say that if they want it to be a real, like, not a Safari replacement, they're going to. I think what the problem with a lot of these. Like these new apps that about comics and stuff. The problem is that they're not. You have to be. It's a gatekeeping. It's basically publishing all over again. Mm-hmm. You have to be approved in order to be on them. And I think that that's a gate because, like, you can't just, if you're a new webcomic artist, you can't really go to one of these and say, "Hey, I'm untested. Would you try me out?" They're not going to let you. So I would actually prefer, if we're going to do an app, that I would actually prefer something that was sort of like, you know, Drunk Duck, and that you could go searching through like genres and be able to discover, maybe do it that way. But Drunk Duck already has a mobile site, so there's really no need for this. So this sort of plays into our next topic a little bit.
But we got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back as I switched our tape reels.
This program is part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. You can find and follow us on Tumblr, Facebook, Google+, and Twitter. Just search for Webcast Beacon. Have thoughts or questions on an episode? You can leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922 or email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Comics, art, and writing discussions, interviews, news, and reviews at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Joni, I've removed the tape reels in the podcast app, so there's no more tape reels, Fess.
Well, no, I'm using tape reels.
The tape reels are awesome!
Joni, I've removed them, Kitty Hawk.
Synthas.
because everyone at Apple hated Scott Forstall. Everyone hated him.
I wish I knew what you're talking about, but okay.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, well, you know, hey, I'm actually excited to see what Ives comes up for the new UI.
Actually, so. I am too, because Ives is very much like I am, because he always expressed interest in Super Flat.
And, it's going to be gorgeous.
And the thing is, everyone hated Scott Forstall there, because Scott Forstall was the only one that was still pushing skeuomorphism there.
I mean, I kind of saw what he was going for. It wasn't as annoying as some people were saying it made.
The games app, Kitty Hawk. The games app with
games app. Okay, so it was a little. It was getting a bit ridiculous. The part I didn't like was that he was coming up with this new, like, we don't actually have to have categories for searching and shit. And there was some other like crazy ass design language shit he was talking about, and I was like, you are just full of bullshit. No, we need organization.
Actually, you know how people were happy? Not because Jobs died, but because Jobs was the only one that shielded Forstall?
Well, he Forstall was like more into... Well, because like what Jobs ultimately wanted was something more like integrated into people's lives. And he knew that like older people aren't going to really like... bring themselves to like something that looks so stark, I guess. But I guess like we've kind of gotten over that. We're now into the everyone is using a device. And honestly, I used to have people come into GameStop and say things like, "I like Miss Pac-Man. It has the good graphics."
Yes, so, I remember that story. But yes. But like I said, it's actually really fascinating reading comments, because that's the thing that I think happened is no one liked Forstall, and Jobs like protected him. As soon as Jobs was dead, Forstall's days were numbered. It was just one screw up. He was one screw up away from being fired.
No, Tim Cook didn't like him, and I know Ives really didn't like him.
Ives would not sit in the same room as him.
Yeah, I actually like Ives a lot, but you can tell that Jobs liked Ives more. So. You know,
I know, but I read lots of interviews where people said that Jobs shielded Forstall a lot.
Well, of course, because like what Steve was doing is Steve didn't want what happened with like when he sort of went AWOL and he sort of let the inmates
run the asylum.
Yeah, so he was trying to prevent that. But anyway,
I thought part of it was because Forstall was like his boy from Next.
Yeah, part of that. I mean, because like he did protect a lot of his Next people, but I think it was also just that he, like I said, he had this idea that like older people responded better to Forstall's design language.
The felt gaming table, really?
And it was okay. It's not that. Like I said, I was not like I didn't think my eyes would bleed out when I saw it. It was. The map's look was kind of like, what? Why did you make it look this way? But the way he made Siri look is gorgeous. So, I mean, he did have some good design language ideas. It's just he was taking it in a crazy-ass direction. And I think it was right to say Ives should be in charge, because, yes, everything should look stark and like that beautiful look from the 60s where everything was white and curved edges.
Yeah, and I do have to admit that the aluminum cases on the things actually are beautiful. I will admit that much, but let's move on to the next story.
Anyway, webcomics. So the next story kind of ties into the previous one. Now, who posted this one?
I came across this article the other day, actually, and it struck me as something we could have a bit of a chat about. Basically, over at the Webcomic Alliance, in their sort of continuing tips and tricks series, they've put up a post written by Tom Falco from the webcomic Tomversation.com, where he's talking about the future of comic reading online being in app form, rather than get people trying to trawl the internet for your invisible webcomic, which has just started up. Why not have them trawl the app store for presumably your equally invisible app that you've just started up to promote your webcomic and draw in new readers? The thing I thought interesting about this is not only with the Comic Chameleon kind of idea where it's one app pulling a number of comics together in a one spot. What Tom in this Webcast Alliance post seems to be saying is just if you've got a webcomic, you should also have a dedicated app for that webcomic so people can read it. How do people think that would actually work?
No, that's
I think I know what he's going for here, and he's not saying it very well. I think he thinks that the App Store can search based on genres and, you know, basically genres of comics.
You go in looking for webcomics in the App Store and get all the ones that you want.
And so, I think you can find comics, but like, I think what he thinks is like, if you found, okay, so like you're into gaming comics and if you downloaded the Penny Arcade app, it's going to recommend all the gaming comics that are similar to it. And it might, because it based on like people's purchases, it might say, oh, okay, you're going to like this too. But I think what the problem he doesn't understand is that normally the App Store is going to show you what the most popular things that people downloaded next. So you're right that like if you're new, you're not going to get discovered. And the other thing he doesn't realize is how hard it is to make an app.
You have to know how to write. You would have to know how to write in the Objective-C. Anyways,
there are GUI editors that can help you, but it will make it look like ass. It's going to look generic as shit.
It's going to look Comic Chameleon. And it's also part of the problem is if you're making a web comic app for your web comic, the most you're going to do is you're going to write a wrapper for Safari, and it's like, oh, whoopty frickin' do.
Oh yeah, why am I not using Safari?
Ben gets real angry on this episode of the Webcomic Beacon.
Yeah. I'm actually right though. That's the thing.
He is right that there's no reason to make. Okay, if it were 2010, I would tell you yes, make an app because it will make you stand out. But it's 2013 now, and I'm going to say an app is not going to make you stand out. Honestly, what you should focus on doing is making a mobile site and then finding a way to link yourself in with other creators, not through like a web ring or something like that. But I would honestly say through social media because...
Or even old-fashioned networking.
Yeah, exactly. Networking. And honestly, the thing is that people who say webcomics are hard to discover. Yes, they are. But the thing is that...
Who says that?
I've heard it so many times, and I'm like, no, it isn't. It's called Google. It's also called... If you're starting out, honestly, get on Drunk Duck or one of those, because those are better for discovery anyway, because they can say, oh, you like this comic? Go try this out. Or this is in this genre, or whatever. Yeah, and there's no app for that right now. There's no app that says, like, this is the, like, Big Panda back in 1999 was the greatest thing that happened to webcomics because it allowed everyone to be able to search for different webcomics, see what was similar to what, and if there was an app for that that would then take you to Safari for that particular website, that would be the best thing ever. But, of course, no one's going to make that because at this point, everyone's still going
away from your app.
Well, the thing is, you could even make that. You could even Sorry, Kitty, go ahead.
No, it's really about money. It's honestly, all these things are about money. They money. Want, they're saying, oh, well, you can make money on the ads. But you got to keep in mind that the person who made the app is also making money on those ads and would prefer you not to go away from their little walled garden.
Exactly. And I think that the, one of the best models for one of the best models for go ahead, Terrence.
Sorry.
Terrence, go.
I was going to say, that is also a problem when you are, as a just starting up, trying to, you know, make your own app for your comic, because you're not only drawing away potential ad views from your actual site onto this app, unless you plug it full of ads, you're also probably drawing away some information on your metrics and who you're getting and where they're coming from and what they're clicking, what, you know, comics they're clicking through and viewing. And that's important data when you're a new webcomic starting up.
Oh yeah.
Like I said,
that's the most important information that you can get. And the thing is that that's why it's important to have a good mobile site, because then you can host your own ads. And you can host, and then you can also get all that data and information. And fortunately, like things like WordPress do have mobile versions of the site. Or if you want to use my version, my software actually has a very nice mobile site, which is not really a mobile site. It's the full site. And Ben can explain a little better. It has
it's called responsive CSS. Basically, the idea is you actually have what's called a CSS media query, which says your screen size is you can do it by centimeters, EM, which I don't really like EM, but some
no, fuck EM.
Pixels, and you say once your screen size is less than 700 pixels wide. Oh wait, I'm a small tablet. I'm going to reformat my shit to. Yeah. Reform my shit. You can just have the same markup.
Swear so much, Jesus.
We have your markup just move around and shit, and then as soon as it's less than 500, oh, I'm a phone. So you just go single column layer cake style, and boom.
Yeah. And so that's all you really need. Is you don't need to be doing an app. And even I would say, even for a large comic, unless you're going to be doing like interactive things like games. Or some kind of like, you know, like action comic or something like that, I would really not get one, because it just does not make sense in the end. And honestly, even if you're doing games, you probably want to sell them as individual games anyway. So, yeah.
So anyway, I did want to make a shout out to Comic Rocket, which is sort of like in the same lines of some of the aggregator sites out there, but as well as a list site, a webcomic list site. But what it does is when you find a comic through there, it'll basically put a frame at the top of your browser and actually show you their website. And they have their own built-in navigation, which will navigate through their website. So they still get the hits. And if you're logged in, you can favorite comics and save your spot in the archives. And I've heard relatively good things about webcomic creators in regards to this thing, because it does bring the traffic to their site. Whether or not it'll work for you is another thing, but it is another thing that's doing something different and being a little bit more fair to the creators, I would say. So Comic Rocket is another option out there, and a more discoverable way for finding other things as well.
So any of those, like Comic Rocket or a Gap Break.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let's go ahead and move on. Unless anybody had a last... we talked about apps enough.
So with Comic Rocket, do you have to do they have to approve you, or can anyone join?
I think it's more or less anyone, but I think it was pretty much started with these are comics I found, and I'm going to start with that, and then maybe people could sign up. I'm not entirely sure of how it worked.
Yeah,
but it's very manual. So if you can get on, no.
Okay, so what I'm saying is like if this is like what I'm talking about, which is where everyone can join, and actually I'm on here, so yay! I guess this is sort of more like Big Panda. Yeah. All right. Excellent.
All right. Let's move on to Wacom finally releasing the driver an updated driver for tablets, i.e., slates and tablet PCs. that use the Wacom Feel IT technologies or the Wacom pen-based technologies, such as older pen-enabled tablet PCs running Windows 7, Vista, and XP Tablet Edition. Hooray! We can use our shit now.
Well, this also has helped with the Surface Pro. Surface Pro had the Microsoft's API called Ink, which basically works with Manga Studio, Sketchbook Pro, and a couple of other programs, including Paint Tool Sci. The only thing that it didn't work with was Adobe Photoshop, because right. Photoshop needs WinTab support, which is what this Wacom driver gives.
Yeah,
and I installed it on Friday on my Surface Pro, and it works beautifully. I have pressure sensitivity in Photoshop now, and it works great. I used it just to finish coloring a page just now. It works beautifully, and honestly, I wouldn't ever use Photoshop to draw a comic from beginning to end, anyways, because I have to give a shout out to Autodesk's Sketchbook Pro, because it works fabulously. I was able to recreate a brush that works just like my old brush when I was inking in about 5 minutes. It's beautiful, and this Wacom driver really helps, because I use Photoshop to do the coloring, and it's amazing, and I was able to get it done extremely quickly.
Yeah, and also just to catch on that, I am working on putting together a whole episode about pen screened tablets for artists, with a little bit of talk with a couple of people about the recent slates, Surface Pro and
Can you guys a Cintiq?
Yeah, not a Cintiq. No, I'm talking about the actual like the slates. And I'm gonna talk to Ben later about his experience with the Surface Pro, because I haven't talked to anybody about the Surface Pro yet. So stay tuned to the Webcast Beacon Network for that episode. So we'll talk about that a little bit more later. So it's pretty great that finally Wacom is starting to update the driver that everybody wanted.
It's usually more on the end of, I think on this side, it's more on the end of, if there isn't a driver, it's because Wacom doesn't feel like there needs to be one. And it could be here they were just sort of like, Microsoft probably paid them for this, because Wacom is actually in the process of making their own slate-like device.
I heard that rumor too, but I haven't yet to see anything.
They actually announced it on their Facebook page. And so this leads me to think, because I know this about Wacom. So there really wasn't much Linux support for Wacom tablets until companies like Pixar and DreamWorks needed support, and then they paid to have that support done for them. So I know that this happens. So what I think is happening is Wacom is focusing more on their own thing. What?
Did they pay Wacom directly, or did they pay a third party to make something that plugs into the Wacom programming?
They pay a third party. I know that they pay some of the Linux companies to make the software and the drivers for them. Yeah, because Wacom has basically said, we're really only focused on the Mac and the PC because that's where our bread and butter is. So if you want anything else, they basically give you the basics, and then they tell you you can do whatever you want. So it's actually pretty cool that they do that, because then Pixar and DreamWorks can get exactly what they want. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it is annoying, because it does lead to things like, I think the support for the slate devices and tablet devices was partially due to the fact that they are kind of we're about to do our own. This really isn't as important. And also, notice they only gave them Bamboo support, which makes me think they're going to, with their own device, have Intuos level sensitivity and tilt and such.
Yeah, my Lenovo ThinkPad, when I bought my Lenovo ThinkPad, it's all the pressure sensitivity is there. except for frickin' Photoshop and maybe manga.
That's just Photoshop, because Photoshop really hasn't been.
Adobe doesn't want to play ball with anybody and bend. No. Yeah,
it's more that Adobe will not upgrade it because all the original people are gone, and honestly, Adobe is running on fumes at this point. And this whole cloud bullshit that they're pulling is just their last gasp attempt at trying to to do something new, because they honestly can't, like. The reason that they haven't ever really been able to put Photoshop on tablets prior to like the Surface was because they couldn't really rewrite it. They don't
have.
That
is true. That is true. So.
Yeah. But, I had to use my point was I had to actually download a Bamboo driver for the notebook for it to actually work. So.
Honestly, I'm going to be really honest here, is I found in my experience that, and this is my only experience, Kidok might have had different experiences, but I found that the sensitivity, that I know it's half of what's on the Cintiq, but I found that it's plenty and it's responsive and it's perfectly good for what I need, and I'm still amazed by it.
Mm. So, Terrence, unless you got something else, we can move on to the next topic.
I wish I had the money to have one of these devices. They sound amazing.
All right. Yeah. Well. That next episode, the episode I've been talking about, will probably come out next month at the very least. I just need to get some time to record a bit with Ben. But our next news topic is basically an old news topic, as in it's older than a week old. Comics Alliance shut down by AOL.
Gasp.
AOL owned things and they're still around? What? No, we'll get back to that. So, Scott Kurtz basically made a tweet sarcastically asking, oh, where will he get his comic news now? And people are calling him out on that. But honestly, I didn't quite get it either. I mean, there's comic news sites all over the place. So why is this big news?
I think anytime a site goes down, someone cares, and I don't know why, because there's always going to be news sites, and because some of the best tech sites I go to were started by some guy that had a passion for it, like and same with comic sites, because comic book resources, I still know some guys that run it, and even in tech sites, like one of my favorite tech sites is Anantech, and Anantech was started by pretty much hobbyists, and that's how it goes, because if you have a passion for it and if you give good factual data, mm-hmm. you will grow. That's the thing. It's you should never be sad about someone going under, because that just means competition is working, the free market's working.
it can still be a little sad.
If it dies, that means they weren't that good anyways.
I remember when I was much more of a console gamer, and it's like you really couldn't find a good rounded magazine. Now this is really before the internet really took off well as far as gamer coverage, because usually it was like a lot of direct stuff. So, and then I remember there was this comic, this magazine called Insight Gamer Magazine. It had the most well-rounded articles, the least amount of bias, because it's like, no matter what, it's like GamePro was totally pro Sony or whatever, and they're totally anti everything. It was so vicious, and you couldn't get like good information, and you know, until the internet. Kind of, but and then
you
it's like they went away, and then it was
the
like
internet fest. What's wrong with you?
There's a lot of there. I mean, it's such a poison industry to have. You know, it's always everyone's always against everybody else versus whatever. But I was like, I remember this is awesome, and I love this magazine, and it didn't survive, and I don't know why. So it was still sad, but yeah, like what you're saying, like free market and all this. Sometimes things that are successful,
well, one of my
things that are better though,
gaming. Was PC Gamer, which was a great magazine because I was a PC gamer, and it really catered to that niche. It had articles by developers I cared about and ratings and stuff that I actually felt not 100% aligned to what I aligned to, but it was close enough that I know which games to give a look at. And I understand it, but at the same time, PC Gamer, you know, I don't know if they're still around or not. I think that I've actually heard that they fizzled out somewhere in the past, but that's just what happens. That it, like Nintendo Power is dead. I mean, are you sad that Nintendo Power is dead?
I haven't followed Nintendo Power since I stopped caring about the console wars, really. And I'm a PC gamer now anyway. I'm a Steam gamer anyway, so you know, it's I don't really care. I mean, I did like all like the individualized focus because I was always a Nintendo gamer. I liked the Nintendo game, so I didn't really care about third parties so much. So it was just expensive, and eventually just couldn't afford it anymore. And then, of course, where do you get all your new information? On the internet. So there wasn't really a point for it, especially if they weren't going to do the in-depth walkthroughs anymore. So there's a variety of reasons. But it's like the internet had been basically killing off the actual physical magazine market for a while now. But that's not really what this is all about.
Comics Alliance wasn't a physical magazine either. It was all online.
Yeah. It was all online and owned by AOL, yeah. Which...
just funny enough in itself.
yeah, it's like, wait a minute, AOL, they're still around. And sadly, Kitty Hawk had to go because she had some workers come to her house to fix something. But I'll see if I have still... I might end up using some of what we had recorded before the show, where she was kind of talking about AOL and the practices thereof of a dying company clutching onto whatever they can do. Apparently, they own the Huffington Post and Winamp. So they just bought up a lot of things that, for people who don't know what AOL is, they were a substandard dial-up internet connection company with ridiculous rates, and you could get their free trial CDs by tripping over them in the street, and I mean that quite literally.
I don't know what the streets of Minnesota are paved with, Fez, but that's kind of graphic.
It's not really graphic, and yes, you could pave the streets with how many free trial CDs they would frickin' give away. It was ridiculous. And then they use their pre.com bubble money to buy more successful properties, which isn't really saying much for them, but a bunch of old people and people who didn't know better about internet connection used AOL. It's bitter much? Nah. But so yeah,
AOL was the internet for a very long time, so I suppose at least they go down in the annals of internet history for that.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, so the Comics Alliance is shut down, but you know it's sad. You know, a relatively big company and people losing their jobs, sort of thing. But you know, there's you know, life will just have to go on. And a little bit here, Free Comic Book Day happened. Did anyone here do anything for Free Comic Book Day?
I drew.
I didn't manage to get to my local comic book store, shamefully. But they did hold some good events there.
Yeah, I went to a few of them. One place had frosted cupcakes with superhero symbols on them and had a couple of artists... from some local artists from that made independent comics that were there. And I also went to like the biggest comic book store in the Twin Cities area here in Minnesota, called The Source Comics and Games. Holy buckets. You'd think it was a convention. I mean, it was packed. There's deals everywhere. They got several comic book artists there, as well as people dressed up in costumes. It was just like a con, and it was pretty awesome. They were basically giving away every single physical free comic book that was available through Diamond Publishing there. I got a big giant bag full of comics, including the Hellboy role player book. And it was like, this okay, I will take that. It was pretty crazy and pretty awesome. I ended up giving my duplicate free comics to my landlord. So, yeah, it was pretty fun.
In place of rent?
No.
Because that'd be great.
Yeah, that's... No. So that was pretty fun. I'm going to see if they're going to do... it was basically Free Comic Book Day 2. Last year they had it. It was called Halloween Comic Fest. So we'll see if they do that again this year, where they also gave away free comics.
How did you notice that was running at the stores you went through, Fez? Because I've noticed there's been a little bit of talk online about the way that it was run this year. People, a comic book shop saying you can get your free comics for Free Comic Book Day, you know, if you spend $10 in store.
Oh, I've never heard of that. That's not how it ever happens here. It's always, they're always on a desk. They say you limit to five. usually is what people say, but the source is basically giving everything away, except they would separate the kids' comics into a different pack. But you only could take
wise.
Yeah, you could only take one pack, so but of course, you know, they're big enough that they can afford to get that many people in there and that sort of thing. But there are a couple other news items that aren't, you know, really that big. So they're going to be posted in with this show post because we're at the end of our time today. Got one. Yeah, that's fine. That is all. That is all. Unless either of you have anything else you'd like to add for this week.
I'm good.
All right.
Man, it's been good.
Awesome. Well, this has been the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network. And let's see, we've had Terrence from Average Joe. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me back again, guys.
And Ben Carver from Animation Aficionados.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
And apparently Kitty Hawk can come back to say goodbye now. So we've also had, we've had Kitty Hawk from Sparkling Generation Valkyrie.
I'll do it. How about this? Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki, SGVY.com. Sexy fun. You'll love it.
Thank you for coming on again.
Oh, thank you.
And
anytime.
Yes. And I've been Fess. And yay! Goodbye. All right, I'm going to go ahead and post some of the conversation that we were talking about after the show. We ended up talking about video game consoles and cell phones. So here's some after-show delight for anybody who is interested in what goes on after we're done recording the newscast portion. Just in time to say goodbye.
Yeah, sorry about that. They're coming to seal some joints. So, and if I were more awake, I could come up with something sexual for that, but I am not, so never mind.
They make a loop for that. Sorry, best I could do.
It's okay. But
hey, Kitty Hawk, did you have a submission in the Smut Peddler at all?
No, I did not. I'm doing some stuff for White Lightning right now, but not Smut Peddler.
Well, that's already long out. So
I was just, I know. Yeah,
I actually did buy it. I haven't actually read through. I've only read two stories this far. I haven't had time to read much of anything. It's on my shelf. But
okay, I see it. Yeah, so this was like a book.
Oh, it's all a giant graphic novel.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Let's see here, and that was one that was pretty interesting because
this is actually like a Kickstarter for a book that I can support because this is like a big anthology, like a big special thing.
Yeah,
my only irritation comes from when like you're collecting your webcomic into dead tree form is when I go, wait, what?
I gotta disagree with you. Some people like the physical book, and a lot of people make the money with that.
I understand that. I understand, and I understand the feeling of holding it in your hand like a baby. But I mean, I'm just sort of like, I've gone through the dead tree phase, and since I got rid of all my books moving here to Australia, I'm actually a lot happier because I'm not like having to think, do I have any more space on my shelf?
And that's fine. It doesn't work for everybody. But what I wanted to say about this, it was, so Spike from Template Arizona was the one who headed it up. She had a lot of cash on hand, basically, in savings. And so she was actually going to pay all the artists a per page rate. And that was what they were going to be paid. And they'd get comped some books as well. And so the thing was, they thought, well, towards the end, when everything was coming together, she decided to go ahead and do a Kickstarter for it. And it did so well, she didn't actually have to use any of her own money, and all the extra money that was made through the Kickstarter, all the artists got more money as well. So
oh,
like,
that's excellent.
Yeah, yeah, it was quite awesome. And she's going to be doing another anthology. It's a horror anthology. And so that's already in the works, and I'm pretty sure that she'll do another Kickstarter thing with that as well. But it's like that to me is like Kickstarter done right. Also doing the stretch goals and things like that. I mean, those are good things. But if we want to look at like kick frauders, we could put it together a show like that. But we're definitely going to need examples. We'll need examples to talk about, and we can use it as a fair warning to potential investors for things to look out for,
and also for people who are thinking about doing a Kickstarter. Right. Like Wired did an article a while back about what not to do in your Kickstarter. And they had a lot of good points, like, you know, don't set an impossible goal and things like that, because it could be important. Because like I think I've seen so many Kickstarters start and they have absolutely no goals, and then they end up like doing stupid things, like, okay, I'm just going to add stuff on, and at the detriment to themselves too. They'll just start like throwing things on and then not really calculating the cost. The one that the only one I always laugh at is, oh shit, I forgot about shipping.
Yeah, that can really hurt you.
Ouya is a really weird Kickstarter, because I support the concept, but at the same time, they are so damn defensive and protective of it. I mean, the developer model shipped out, and it like worked like ass, and people were like, and tech sites were saying, yeah, it's buggy as hell. It doesn't work good. It doesn't work right.
It's
and
the Ouya Phantom all over.
Ouya just all of a sudden start attacking them, saying it's a developer model. You're not supposed to attack. It's like,
well,
but you did this Kickstarter. You should deliver something that is at least decent.
The minute I started going about Ouya was like when they didn't really like EA. I think was the only people that signed on. And no one else signed on, and I was like, "Oh, that's not good."
Yeah, you can play sports games on it.
Well, I mean, I think it really would be cool to have like a something like this, and I hope that if the Steam box is coming, is it coming?
It is, but actually, I have more faith for GameStick than the Steam box, because
I have a lot of faith for Steam box because it is a PC and the PS4 as well.
I would buy the Steam box.
Sorry to quickly jump in, but I really have to go because I got to get going to work.
All right,
yeah.
Thanks coming, and we'll catch you next morning. Time.
Yeah, sounds good, guys.
Yeah.
Sorry. Talking to you. Sorry for we yeah. can. Yeah.
So good. Yay. All right, we'll catch you on the next one.
See ya.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I have actually a second PC hooked up to my big TV in the living room here, specifically for playing, like, Portal and, you know, Civilization or whatever on a big TV. I would totally buy a standalone, something smaller, something that will just be there, something I don't have not a giant PC tower I have to worry about next to my big TV. I would totally get something like that.
Yeah, and that's why, like, I think it's really cool that, like, everyone's sort of moving towards the model of, like, let's make a universal box, because, well, consoles are pretty much over as far as, like, because, like, Nintendo's Wii U's not doing well. I think Microsoft's going to try the 720, and it's just going to be let's slap a Kinect on top of, you know, with the Xbox. Ooh, now it's a new console.
I think they're going to do something a little bit more than that, because they have been trying to position themselves as a cable box replacement at the same time.
Yeah,
and that might have some legs to it. If they can say, you don't need five boxes, you just need one box, that has some legs to it.
It does, but it's also incredibly expensive, especially if one part breaks. That was the biggest problem with the PlayStation 2 generation, to the point that, yes, actually the PS2 is a great DVD manipulator. It was basically the system that brought the DVD mainstream fast. And that's
that was the selling part. I mean, like,
right.
I remember them saying, don't buy Dreamcast, buy a PlayStation 2. It's got a DVD player.
It was manipulative, but then later it's like,
well, they owned the technology.
PS2 started to crap out, and it's like I didn't understand why people kept buying the fucking things, because it always broke down. You should demand a free replacement.
Okay, but, P.S. No one bought them. The way that you did it was people would just return them to Walmart. And if you sat there for a few hours and argued with the person behind the counter at Walmart, you got another PS2.
And the thing that I look at is, like I said, with is Microsoft, I don't know if it's going to work or not, but they are saying it replaces your cable box, replaces places like what's one of those internet boxes, it replaces all that. Here's a box that can play games. Mm-hmm. It can be your cable box, mm-hmm. be your internet box. You know, you can do your Hulu, your Amazon Prime, and all that, Netflix. All on one device. And that's their plan because that's the biggest thing, is they always say that there's a battle for the living room. It's not just a battle for the console; it's a battle for the living room.
Right.
That's how.
And I think they've been doing things right. I mean, the Xbox was a total failure financially.
Xbox was
financially.
As far as financially, it was a failure.
Yeah, but
it definitely was a nice foot in the door. And
unlike
if they hadn't
Sega,
had their millions of dollars, we wouldn't hear about it anymore.
Unlike Sega, they stuck with it.
Sega lost the money. They didn't have money. The problem was is when companies like Sony and Microsoft came into the market and they had other revenue streams, that's what killed Sega.
I know,
now,
and
I
understand
don't think
that.
It's fair.
And I'm saying that's no, what really killed Sega was what Sega did in the past. They've always came out with, ooh, we're so far ahead of the competition, but we're also so expensive. And I just saw a video on Extra Credits basically pointing out that every single time there's been a highly successful, the more powerful system has never been the quote-unquote winner of a console gen. And that's the thing. They come out with way too much stuff. It's over the current market, and it doesn't get adopted,
Sega was never more powerful.
It was not more powerful.
The Genesis was more powerful than the NES. The Saturn was more powerful.
The more apt comparison between the NES would be the Master System, because the Genesis
the
was more of a competitor against the SNES.
Okay. You know what? TurboGrafx-16 was part of the same generation as the NES, more powerful. It actually was very successful. But the Genesis is more powerful than the previous generation. It just came out first. And it wasn't more powerful. The Saturn was not more powerful. The Dreamcast was not more powerful. The problem with Sega was they just kept throwing like new consoles out, and they wouldn't actually listen to the engineers who kept saying, we need to go with less exotic equipment, which is the problem. What happened with with Sony and Microsoft recently was they went for exotic hardware. They decided, oh, we'll go for this exotic hardware and everyone's going to program for it. And of course, that's why like ports look like ass.
Well, the best
is that is the big problem. And Kitty Hawk's absolutely right about this, because the thing is, the PS3 technically does have more graphics processing and central processing than the 360 by a large margin. But the 360 has better rendering because the APIs are better written.
But the problem with the 360 is it has a bizarre CPU. The problem with the PS3 is not just like the CPU is a bizarre CPU. It's just also it doesn't have any RAM whatsoever, which always made me go, why did you give it this powerful CPU and then you give it only 512 megs of RAM? What the fuck? Why did you do this?
I know, but one of my favorite things to see is when you compare renderings of a PS3 version of a game with the 360 version of the game. 360 version of the game, 8 times out of 10 looks better.
It's because it's a little less exotic.
Because, like I said, Microsoft actually did a better job with the graphics APIs versus what Sony did. Because I've heard from developers saying that writing for the PS3 is a pain.
Well, it's because it's so exotic. And okay, you know why Sony was so popular during the PlayStation days? It wasn't just that they had a lot of money. It was also that they put a lot of money into tools for developers.
Right.
And they sort of did this through the PS2 days, but then by the time they got to the PS3 days, they were so high on the hog, they were like, fuck you, developers, we don't need you, until they started shipping the PS3 units to the developers, and the developers were like, WTF, I can't program for this. And then they actually had to send Sony programmers over to companies like Koei to finish up their games because they couldn't program for it. So I'm so sorry.
I'm so glad I have not been in the console wars. The Wii was the last thing that I bought.
Another great example of this is and this is goes into mobile. One thing I hate is when I have an app and it is an iOS port and it is a sloppy port where they like use a converter or something to convert it to Android, and that pisses me off because Android does have a very robust app creation system that is not that hard to use. And people always complain about Android apps crashing. I'm like, no, it's usually the iOS ports that crash because someone doesn't spend the time to like rewrite the app. All they do is just do a port. It has iOS design elements in it, and it crashes all the time. Gee, I wonder why. It's a port. That's why it crashes.
Well, also, there's multiple devices to worry about.
That has nothing to do with it.
That has everything to do with Android. That's why you write an iOS version, because you know it's going to be universal. And you're guaranteed to have one store, so you're not going to have the problem with the fragmentation. When you go over into Android land, you have the problem with the fragmentation of the store. Then you have the problem of there are so many devices with so many different specs that you're just like, I'm just going to try to come up with an average and go for that. Honestly is bullshit to go over to Android world. Like, okay.
I think it's getting better now, though. I think the newer Android devices now are getting better than in the beginning, because the problem was Google didn't really give like a sort of, here's a baseline for everybody. They were just like, here, go.
They absolutely did.
No, they did not, because they let the Chinese and they let the Koreans fork the project and do their own crap. That's why all the Samsung crap has like holes and shit in it, because they let them do whatever they wanted. They let them all come up with their own versions that have like lockouts and what they take features out.
What Google should have done, it says, okay, everybody use this ratio, at least use this goddamn ratio, because especially in the beginning, all the Androids, they never had like a simple solitary ratio. It always varied
but that's the beauty, if you actually design an Android app using the actual SDK, you don't have to worry about screen ratio, because you
can't have a 16 A 16.9 and a 15.8?
Okay, the problem with Android is the problem you have with PCs. There's just too many manufacturers, and they're all want to do the same. They all want to do their own thing. That's why you cannot allow the hardware to fall into the hands of someone else. If you're going to do a phone. Now, with a PC, I guess you could make the argument that you could have different OS, because it's been so long that we have a single interface. But the thing is that with a phone, you really need to have it from start to finish be one company, so that there is one design language, one size. And Google had the money to do this.
Google had
the money in the beginning to buy Motorola, do their own phone, and then we wouldn't have the bullshit of the fragmentation of Android and the also, oh, I'm sorry, Grandma, you got the wrong Android. You can't run that app. Sorry. Maybe you shouldn't have trusted that guy at Verizon.
Kitty Hawk, I don't think it's as much as a physical phone thing, because I think it all can work.
I'll hear you out, but then I've got something to say about that.
Okay. I think part of it is it's open source, because a lot of Google's based off of open source, so they can't actually, they can't technically force everybody to do one thing, otherwise they go
technically they can, because, and I'm going to correct
you, it's based on stuff they can't sell, but this is how it works.
Android itself, the actual OS, is open source. However, if you want to have the Google apps, if you want to use Google Maps, Gmail, and Google Play, and all those, you have to stick by guidelines. What Google should have done was kept those guidelines for having Google, for having access to the Google apps.
Right. Strict.
That's yeah, they should. And that's where it went wrong. And right. that's why I say
it doesn't need to be a physical thing, though. It's all saying it's OK. It's like okay, the ratio.
You, sir, have not worked in GameStop and had to have people come in and say things like, I just bought this game and I have a new machine. Why won't it play? And the problem is that the average person does not understand when you have to explain to them, well, I'm sorry, you got the wrong model, or I'm sorry, you don't have the resources on your machine to do this, or whatever the fuck reason. So that's why I hate Android. I hate Android because I'm a power user, and most people that I talk to, and y'all, I would consider
you're a Mac, aren't you? Well. You're a Mac, aren't you?
But, she is. But that's regardless. That's the fact because I do understand what she's saying, and this is part of why I buy Nexus devices. Yeah.
Because you're staying, and that's the thing. Why, if you're going to buy an Android, if I were to buy an Android, I would buy a Nexus device. Why? Because it's the closest to Google. Because I'm going to have least bullshit dealing. Because like I have had a Android tablet, and we were like, yay, let's get some games for it. They didn't all work, or they would be buggy, and I was like, "This is bullshit."
I think we can all agree. I think we actually all agree that Google did apps wrong.
They dropped it by saying you can do what you want.
Yeah,
and right. they should have done was what they did with VCRs when VCRs came out. JVCs hold all the licensees. You're going to do it this way, or you don't get the license. And Google, because they were so desperate to get it out there, and they shouldn't have been desperate because they're Google, they said, you guys can do whatever the fuck you want, when what they should have said is, do you want to lose to Apple? No, you don't. Do it our way.
part of it is they could have kept Android itself open and just say, if you want the Google apps, do it this way.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. They should have killed they first came up.
Honestly, they should have just said, no, there's only one way to do this. Now, if you want to write like a driver, like they should have treated it like Linux and said, if you want to write a driver for it, cool, we'll add it in there if it's safe. But they didn't do that. They just said, here's the basic Android, do whatever you want with it. And then you end up with like the crazy ass devices that can't do anything.
Right.
And then you get a call from grandma and she's like, I bought an Android, but I can't get the Facebook app. And you're like, where did you buy the Android? And she's like, I bought it at the Kmart. And I'm like, fuck.
Well, that's why, like I said, I always buy Nexus devices now
But you can't tell grandma to do that because grandma goes to the store and all she sees is the words Apple and Android. And she doesn't understand all these other words. That's why I have a big thing about like usability and things like that is because I remember having to do tech support for old people and even young people. And I'm like, you know what? Well, I just want to be simple.
I have too. But I still love Nexus devices. I bought my dad a Nexus phone and I think that the Nexus 4 was a great idea because it's $300 outright, no contract, no subsidies, just $300. And that should have been a lot more disruptive than it was.
No. And the thing is that if the Nexus works for you and your father, that's fine. But what I'm trying to point out is I can't hold the hands of like all my relatives and tell them, you know, here's what you have to buy because I'm not in America right now, for one thing. Yeah. So when they call me up and they say, I bought this device, and I'm like, I can't make that work. I'm so sorry. You should have just bought an Apple.
Or you should have talked to me first is what you should have said.
Well, and I just tell them honestly, and it's not just because I own one. It's honestly because I've handed iPhones to old people, and they just start using it. And I don't have to tell them what to do. And when I saw that, I was like, well, that's it. That's done. I don't have to like sit there with grandma and tell her, here's how you use the app. Here's how you do this. Oh,
I don't know.
Crash.
I still think it should have more than one flipping button, though. I've actually been really happy with my HTC Sensation, and the HTC One is actually looking pretty good. One thing I think that HTC is actually doing right is that they basically are making their own environment. I mean, there's a lot of built-in HTC. Well, wait, let me finish.
No, go ahead.
Like they got their own phone app. No, not their phone app. Their mail app, calendar app, and they're a lot better to use than the Google apps. Actually,
what
and,
the mail app is shit.
Maybe not. Maybe. Okay, the mail app is okay, but the calendar app is a lot better. And there's like a lot of the other. There's a lot of other.
When was the last time you used the Google Calendar app?
Oh shit, that's what I remembered. But yeah, HTC got caught recently. Like anyone can read your mail on an HTC device.
What?
Or something? Yeah, there was something recently with that. HTC has really bad security on their phones.
Yeah, that's part of the problem HTC. HTC has the least offensive skin since currently is evolved to being where it's very little different from standard Android now, the latest sense. And the HTC One does have one of the most brilliant design features I've ever seen on a smartphone.
Speakers on the front.
Front-facing speakers.
Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, like I said, I am just super happy with my Nexus 4 because it's pure Google, pure Android. I don't have any skins. I don't have to worry about anything. And it's actually been rock solid. There's been no problems. There's been no issues. And I have unlimited data for $30 a month.
Well, you go with like one of the resellers.
No, yeah,
What type of unlimited data, Ben?
I just go with straight T-Mobile.
I'm on T-Mobile too.
T-Mobile now, okay.
Yeah,
well, T-Mobile is the shit.
I have... Well, as long as you're within a metropolitan area.
Oh, come off it.
I did a road trip to frickin' Colorado, and the only place I had T-Mobile service was when I was in a city.
But the best part is I have no contract. I have no contract for $30 a month. If I ever don't like it, I just buy a new SIM and put it in, and that's the beauty of it. I have no contracts weighing me down. I pay $30 a month for unlimited data.
I don't have a contract either because I bought the phone, but I have an old, I was on an old contract and they don't have this anymore, but I pay whatever it is. But it's like, it's so old. It has a 500 minute thing, but it's nights and weekends and mobile to mobile. And I never call that much anyway. It has unlimited texting, and it also, you know, like anybody has quote unquote unlimited data, but it also, I got it at the time when I had 5 gigabytes of high speed data, which is awesome because the minimum now is like everybody's lowering their unlimited data high speed to be like 2 gigabytes or less.
So I have 5.
Yeah, because you stayed in an old plan, right?
So you're in a grandfather's plan.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so I have no interest to move right now because anywhere else, I'd have to pay more. Yeah, because
you would have to go to the new Rate Me plans. Which I'm really hoping that here in Australia, they're actually looking into the mobile pricings, and they're thinking like they want to do something like force the telecoms to go to a European style where you're not like putting the plan, buying the phone like subsidized. You buy the phone outright and then you can change out the SIMs.
Exactly,
I'm hoping that this works out. I'm sure there's going to be some kind of compromise because there always is.
That's the one thing I hate is when I ever talk to someone that says, "Well, I just bought a new phone for $200. You paid $300, Ben. I paid less." I'm like, "You pay $80 a month for your plan. Plus, if you ever don't like the service, you have to pay $350 for the cancellation. Well, so who's smarter now?"
Yeah, and also you get less.
With me, I didn't have to pay anything up front for my phone. In fact, that's like just included into my monthly.
Yeah.
And I'm paying about how much I paid for AT&T for both of our phones.
Yeah, T-Mobile, at least here, they're the only one of the four that let me pay my phone off without interest over the course of 20 months or whatever it was. And it's like,
T-Mobile
is
awesome.
Yeah, and then, of course, at the time, it was like, there's either the plan you sign up for, which basically they'll get their money back through the plan anyway. But if you buy your own phone, it was like $20 cheaper per month anyway because you bought your own phone. I pay it's an old plan. It's $60 a month for 500 talk and unlimited text, unlimited web, and that's also on 5 gigabytes. And then I have the hotspot and a bundle and a protection bundle, but I'll probably end up dropping those. But
And who is this? Who's this providing
this? This is T-Mobile.
Okay, T-Mobile. Yeah, I think I actually had that plan. I actually switched to AT&T when the iPhone came out.
Yeah.
And I got grandfathered into the unlimited plan.
Yeah, if I move anywhere else, I might pay less, but comparatively, I'd also lose the gigabytes of data that I would get.
Really? Like I said, I have 5 gigs of high speed for $30 a month. I have unlimited text, 100 talk minutes.
Yeah, but this is back when they had the even more. This I'm on the even more plus thing from like 4 years ago.
Before smartphones became big, they were giving out data like crazy. And then as soon as they realized that their old, outdated network wasn't going to handle the load, that's when they started getting all stingy and shit. Even though, like, they were handed millions of dollars to upgrade that shit back in the 90s. But whatever, you know.
And like I said, I just like it because T-Mobile is trying to be disruptive with pricing. And that's what they should be.
I mean,
they're now SoftBank, and Japan. Well, Japan is really hoping to get into the American market because, let's be honest here, is aside from like kind of rolling out some 4G, which whoopty fucking do, AT&T and Verizon aren't really doing anything. They're just sort of they're like, oh, we're gonna roll it into some cities, and then we'll wait for the government to give us some money so we can sort of half-ass do it.
Well, that's the biggest problem
that's the problem with private companies. The problem is
GSM is a free standard where basically any cell phone carrier can be a GSM carrier.
Yeah.
But the problem with GSM is it requires more towers than CDMA. But CDMA, the problem is it's a locked in device, and yes, CDMA towers can transmit further. But they kind of suck.
And also, it's an American technology, and the rest of the world didn't really use it, except for China.
But CDMA sucks, though.
It does. Oh no! I will. I hate CDMA with a passion. With the upgrades. I don't know. I know that they're upgrading here in Australia, and the NBN is like a part of the big. We're going to build a big broadband network, and maybe we'll have some free Wi-Fi, which is what I'm really looking forward to. Things are looking up here, but as for America, I'm as far as like cell phones, I'm just sort of like
America.
I don't know. Maybe T-Mobile/SoftBank will be able to shake things up. I heard Sprint though is trying to merge with someone.
Sprint is trying to like buy the controlling interest in Clear. But they're having lots of problems with it, and Clear uses Clear also is trying to use the WiMAX standard of 4G.
Okay. Here's what's going on. It's not just Clear. So, SoftBank, who owns T-Mobile now, is bidding against Dish Network for Sprint. And Alibaba, that big trading company in China, is also involved. Oh, Alibaba is the underwriter for the IPO for one of them, for SoftBank. And so SoftBank and Dish are both bidding for Sprint. This is weird. Why would Dish bid for Sprint?
Well, here, I think it has something to do with this. One thing that I thought was incredibly genius as well as questionable is this sort of pseudo deal between Comcast and Verizon with Xfinity. They're clearly in cahoots with each other. But I guess that it's legally sound right now. They're just basically mutually working together with this third party Xfinity.
You do know that the Verizon has been thinking about selling off Fios because they don't want it anymore, because Fios is the last unionized part of their company and they've been trying to kill it for years. So I think maybe part of that is they might be about to hand over Fios over to Comcast, which would effectively give them a monopoly in the Northeast. So that would be sad, but, you know, Verizon doesn't like Fios because, you know, they have to pay those people. So that's part of the reason that, like, Verizon left Hawaii was Hawaii told Verizon, okay, now that you're here, you have to give us Fios because that's part of the business package that you sold us when you came in here. And Verizon told them, you can go fuck yourself. So the state of Hawaii sued them and won. And then Verizon left the next day because Verizon doesn't want to expand Fios because that means more union workers. Oh, well. Now, and in the case of Sprint and Dish, it's probably more that Dish is thinking about getting on mobile devices, which it's like, okay, well, I think that's kind of stupid.
I think it's in the same way that Comcast and Verizon work together with Xfinity, meaning that if you have both, you got Xfinity between them and you can watch your Comcast cable stuff through your Verizon stuff. And
I don't want to watch my Comcast cable stuff.
I understand.
Phone.
I think that's what they're going for is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying here is what's going on with SoftBank and Sprint and Dish and all that. But it's still like, I don't want that.
Well, then don't get it.
You know what the worst wireless proposal I remember is? I remember this guy, I forgot his name, but I remember this guy at some tech shows I went to. I think he was at one of the South Bys, and this guy came in and he says, I have this plan for this wireless company that isn't a wireless company. And his idea was you get like lots of people buy this phone that he has, specially tailored. And what it is basically all these phones like tethered to each other, like across like miles and miles, and one guy somewhere on the line is on Wi-Fi, and that sort of makes it work kind of. And it's the most retarded idea ever, but he kept on pitching it as a company, and he even had a booth and shit. And Kitty, like, you know what I'm talking about, right?
No, I totally know what you're talking about. And
It sounds like the torrent method of cell phones.
Except it won't work.
Yeah, everyone's going to be a leecher. No one's going to actually seed. Yeah, that sounds like an absolutely terrible idea. Unless you're talking about maybe for like a very local company, but even then, but.
Well, actually,
you could do a wireless. Now, people used to do this. You can do a wireless network involving like line of sight deals where, like, you know, you shoot a laser between two points. And this has been used before. But I don't think this is what that guy's talking about.
No.
No. Yeah. That would actually be cool. What he's talking about is, so I'm going to like have some repeaters in like my house.
Yeah.
Well, we're basically one guy has to act like a tower for 20 people.
Okay. Well, I mean, putting more towers around is not a bad thing.
But one guy with his phone is like.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, putting more towers around, good idea. This guy with a phone, no.
You know what? At least it's better than Republic Wireless. Now, that one was a joke.
Oh, what was that?
It's a $20 a month phone plan, but. It's not really a phone plan because the idea is this. You can use the phone and use the internet, but if you use too much, we'll lock you out.
Oh.
Because what you should be doing is using Wi-Fi, you bad person, you.
Oh, I've seen those things. Yeah, those are hilarious where they're like, oh, we're so much cheaper, and then you don't get shit. It's like having one of those fake health insurance plans.
I think I have health insurance. I think I know somebody who has one of those, and she understands that, but she only can afford so much, and she only really needs wants that for when she goes to shows and she uses her Square. Otherwise, she is home anyway on a wireless.
And that's why at that point I wouldn't be doing a monthly plan. I'd just be doing as I know that prepaid like expires after 90 days, but prepaid is much cheaper.
It is. It really is. And that's
She needs a data phone. She wanted a data phone for that.
No, I know, you can get prepaid data phones now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I have a my T-Mobile plan is actually a prepaid plan. That's the thing. I have a $30 a month. It's T-Mobile prepaid. $30 a month, 500, five gigs of high-speed data, 100 minutes, unlimited text, and it's $30 a month. I can buy as many credits as I want to ahead of time, but it's
Right off the phone here in Australia, you can buy a prepaid data phone. In Hawaii, I saw lots of places had prepaid like Androids, and I know now they do prepaid iPhones. So it's not a big thing now to get a prepaid data or anything like that.
Well,
but I gotta go.
Do you mind if I put this at the end of the show? Since I don't know, I'll see if this is something that people would find of interest. And see if it works, because I think we had a pretty interesting conversation here for a while anyway. Yeah. We started talking about cell phones, but if you're fine, I'll experiment and put it on the end of the show and see what people think.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Later, guys.
All right. All right. Bye. Later. Bye.